produced the city of Cedar Rapids, which continues to grow and invite more people. And I couldn't be happier to introduce the man that won that election, my friend, the Honorable Mayor Ron Corbett.
Thank you, Linda. What a crowd. Thank you for being here tonight for this celebration. As Linda said, we've been friends for about 8 years. We haven't been lifelong friends, Linda, but I hope we're friends the rest of our life. Linda was such an inspiration to me. She was one of those flood-affected people that was able to rebuild her home. She rebuilt her home, and she had an open house. People came. She toured the house, and she gave me a personal tour, room by room by room. And we ended in the kitchen. And a glow came over her face, and she said, "This is my favorite place in the whole house." And I said, "Why is that?" She says, "Well, before, I had this box kitchen. It really wasn't very functional. And today I have this beautiful open kitchen with a breakfast bar and lighting." And then I asked her this question. I said, "Why didn't you build it the way it was?" And she said, "I had a chance to make it better, and I did." That's been so inspirational to me. It just seems like yesterday, it was 8 years ago, that I stood over on the west side of Cedar Rapids, and I chose this triangle piece of property on the west side, first of all, because it was symbolic, but it also showed the challenges our community had. It was a triangle piece of property. On the back side of the property was Swiss Valley Farms. That company had closed after the flood, the 50-plus jobs eliminated, and the property off the tax rolls. On the other side of the triangle was the old fire station, the fire station that stood abandoned as a monument of delay in our community. And then on the third side of that triangle were houses. Houses that were vacant that still had the high water marks on them. And I stood there and said we needed a new game plan for Cedar Rapids. Some criticized me because I was pointing out some of the problems and the challenges that our community was facing. They said, "Well, he's being negative." And I said, "I'm not negative at all. I'm positive. I'm optimistic about our future." See, you can't get to the next level if you don't recognize what's preventing you from getting you there. We put together a new game plan for Cedar Rapids. That game plan included taking care of people, making sure that those that were affected by the flood could get back on their feet. That game plan meant rebuilding our infrastructure. See, if the public doesn't reinvest or invest in themselves, why would the private sector invest? And that game plan included rebuilding our jobs and our property tax base. But a lot of people can put together a game plan, can't they? The key is always execution. Can you execute on that game plan? And that's what we did in Cedar Rapids, and it's great here to be at the Newbo City Market, down in the heart of Newbo, that has buildings that are new, private sector, public sector, and residents all coming together at once. But there was something even more special about the recovery and the rebuilding of Cedar Rapids. We did put together a new game plan, and we did execute on it. But there was something that was different. It was successful because you, the people of Cedar Rapids, participated in that game plan. Did everybody agree on 100% of what we were trying to do? No, but everybody found a piece that they could support. and they participated in that game plan. And that's what made our recovery and our rebuilding, provided the resiliency of that community that we have today that we call Cedar Rapids, because the people participated. I've been thinking a lot about Iowa. I've been thinking that Iowa probably needs a new game plan. You see, we've come to the close of the Branstad era. It's time to elect new leaders with new ideas that have a new game plan for the state of Iowa. You see, if we keep electing the same people to look at the same problems, they're going to come up with the same solutions. So we have an opportunity now for a new game plan in Cedar Rapids and in Iowa. And so it's today in this resilient city of Cedar Rapids that I stand proudly and announce I'm going to run for governor of the great state of Iowa and bring a new plan to this state. Now, when I first saw all the signs, I said to myself, is my dad running for governor? People in Iowa like to kick the tires of the candidates. I know that it's a long tradition in our state, and it goes back to being the first in the nation caucus. I think there are really three things that people look for in a candidate. They look to who that person is, what's in their heart, and why are they running. So let me tell you about who Ron Corbett is. I'm a guy of action. I like to get things done. I have ideas, but I'm not so arrogant enough to think that I'm the only person that has ideas. Other people can have good ideas too. My personality isn't, it's my way or the highway. I spend about 80% of my time listening and the other 20% of my time teaching. Why do I listen? I listen to learn. Now, I'm not big on labels. I really don't like labels. They have a tendency to pigeonhole us. They have a tendency to close our minds. But if you want some labels, I'm not a renegade Republican. I'm not a rubber stamp Republican either. Say I'm a conservative Republican with an independent streak. I can think for myself, but I also appreciate advice and counsel from people. I don't really like our politics today. Seems pretty toxic to me. I don't have to give you any examples of just what's happening in our country recently. I wonder how much of the responsibility falls on the candidate. I think a lot of it does. I'm not going to be a raw, red meat candidate. If you want someone like that to be your governor, you need to go to a different rally. See, if you eat too much raw, red meat, what happens? You get sick. And that's what's happened to our political system. It's sick. You got to cook the meat, right? That I'm a meat lover, and you talk to any good backyard barbecuer, they'll tell you, you got to cook the meat. And that's what we got to do. We got to focus on honest assessment of our policies. You'll get that from me. You'll get frank discussion from me. I'll be the person that's a straight shooter. It's my responsibility as a candidate to tell my story, but it's also a two-way street. Citizens have to learn their candidates too, and I've written a book called Beyond Promises, and I did this to tell the story of not just Cedar Rapids and our flood recovery, but a little bit about me. So I'll spend the next year campaigning before the primary, and I hope you'd spend an hour or two reading the book. If you do, you'll find out that Ron Corbett is a man of the people. So that's a little bit about who Ron Corbett is. But what's in my heart? Let me give you two illustrations. 1999, I was the Speaker of the Iowa House of Representatives. That's the top lawmaker in the Iowa legislature in the House, elected by all the representatives. I was a big shot. I was 39 years old. I became Speaker of the House when I was 34. I was on this meteoric run. People were saying I was going to run for governor. Well, it may have been my turn, but it wasn't my time. I walked away from it all. At 39 years old, I walked away from it all. All the power, all the prestige. Was I bored? No. Was I burned out? No. Why did I leave? I left for five reasons. Jeremy, Matthew, Nicholas, Anna, and young Thomas, who was on the way. You see, I wasn't going to be one of those absentee fathers. You hear that song, Cats in the Cradle? When you coming home, Dad? When you coming home, son? That was my Cats in the Cradle moment, and I walked away from it all. You know, sometimes the mission field is your own backyard, and the people that need your attention are the ones on the swings playing in that backyard. That's the heart of Ron Corbett. And in 2008, after the flood of Cedar Rapids, and I saw the devastation and the anguish and the pain of the people of our community as they were trying to get back up on their feet, and I ran for mayor and I won. And I got this awesome responsibility to be the leader of this great city. And I was looking for inspiration. And I turned to the Old Testament Proverbs, an awesome fine wisdom in the Bible. Proverbs 31:8. Speak for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. Speak up and judge fairly. Defend the rights of the poor and the needy. That's a pretty good verse, isn't it? It isn't something that maybe just a mayor should live by. It's something that maybe other people should live by too. And I'm thinking if I get elected governor, that I'll live by that verse also. That's the heart of Ron Corbett. So you know a little bit about who I am. You know a little bit about what my heart is. So why am I running? I'm not a single issue candidate. The job is bigger than that. But you can't have a million priorities either, can you? Otherwise, nothing gets done. I put together what I think is a core four primary goals and objectives for the state of Iowa. Let me highlight each one of those. And over the course of the next week, I'm going to give speeches around the state that really goes into detail on these. But the first one is we have to grow our state. You know, we have 73 counties that have lost population. The state of Nebraska, which we can beat in football, right? And we can outproduce them in corn, actually grew their population last year more than the state of Iowa. And this slow growth state status is hurting us as a state. It's hurting our ability to advance. And one of the challenges is our income tax system is an old income tax system for an old economy. Our top tax rate, and I know taxes get complicated, our top tax rate is 8.98%. When people from other states are looking to move here, that's a sticker shock for them, 8.98. We're out of whack when it comes to our income tax rates. We need to be more competitive at inviting people to move to our state. Our system is very complicated. Three fewer lines than the federal IRS form. The IRS, this big behemoth organization, and Iowa only has three fewer lines than the IRS, costs a lot of money in a complicated system. We often pay tax attorneys or accountants to do our taxes or expensive websites. people that make $40,000 a year in Iowa pay a higher effective rate than someone that makes $1 million a year. I don't think that's fair. It's the bell curve. And we have a bracket in the middle income that get higher rates than people that make $1 million a year. Every politician talks about helping the middle class. We have middle class tax squeeze in this state. So we're not competitive. It's very complicated, and it isn't fair. We need to get that rate down to about 3%, get rid of all the special interest deductions, make our rate more competitive so more people will think about not just staying here but moving to the state of Iowa. But I would be foolish to tell you that there's one magic potion to move our state forward. The tax rates are critical, and they're important, but we also need government stability. Government stability and predictability is so important to providing consumer confidence. And right now we don't have it as it relates to our budget. We have chaos and unpredictability. And it's sad. And the budget that we have and the direction that we're going with some of the budget practices is the wrong direction. I've seen this before. In the late 80s and 90s, the state started going down a path of poor budgeting practices, and we build up a $408 million deficit. Now, I think what's wrong is that at the state level, their calculator either isn't working or it's broken. You can't keep getting it wrong month after month. You say you're going to borrow $131 million for ongoing expenses, and then 2 months later, you're advocating borrowing for another $50 million to get through the year. Paying our bills with one-time money is bad. I've used this calculator. I've used it a lot. When I first became mayor, the city manager wanted to raise the tax rates in the city, and I said, no, we're not going to do that. He said, well, there's no other way. We'll have to lay off police and fire. I said, there's got to be a better way. So what did we do? I pulled out the calculator, and every night for about 3 weeks, 2 hours a night, I punched through these calculator keys, and you know what we did? We got that budget balanced, and we did it without raising any property taxes. And in the city of Cedar Rapids, we haven't raised the property taxes in the last 8 years. Well, I get elected governor, I'll take the calculator with me. We'll get back to stability and predictability. Why is it so important? Because when you don't have that, you have confusion. Think of all the students that just graduated this year from high schools. Parents, grandparents, we're all proud of them, aren't we? And they're planning on going maybe University of Iowa or Iowa State or UNI, and they've been planning for years to go there. And what happened 2 weeks ago? The State Board of Regents says, oh, by the way, your tuition's going to go up 5% next year. And that's three times the rate of inflation. And then they telegraphed and said, and guess what? It's going to go up more in the future, probably double digits. How can families plan when there's that much instability and unpredictability in the budget? So number one, we've got to take care of our income tax system and get that rate down to about 3%, become more competitive, more fairer, and less complicated, and we need predictability and stability in our state government. Number two, we have a water quality crisis in our state. Just this last week, I read in the paper, Cedar Falls had high nitrate levels in their water. And a local community in Cedar Rapids area has a boil alert. Now, all these chemicals that run off the farmland, and that's not all farms, some of it's the cities, make their way all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico. It's a place called the Dead Zone. This is years and years of all these chemicals making their way down rivers and byways and streams in the states of the Midwest. The Dead Zone, you can see it from space. It's not photoshopped. It's actually there, this Gulf hypoxia, this Dead Zone. The people of Iowa in 2010 passed a constitutional amendment called the Natural Resource and Outdoor Protection Trust Fund to take care of our water. 2010, I know we don't remember what we had for dinner a couple weeks ago, but in 2010, you led the way, 60% of the voters in this state led the way and said we wanted to take care of our water and our soil for future generations, and they've been ignoring the will of the people down in Des Moines. Why? Why have they been doing that? In Native American culture, they have a principle called the seventh generation principle. And what that means is making decisions today, how are they going to affect you seven generations from now? Generations, 20 years. That's 140 years. We kind of understand this principle. Farmers do. They have signs at the end of their driveway when they have a century farm. A century farm is 100 years. That's five. What's our principle today? Do we operate under the seventh generation principle? Do we operate under the century farm principle? No, we operate under the next election principle. That is so short-term in our thinking. We need longer-term thinking when it comes to protecting our environment, specifically the quality of our water and the health of our soil. You know, as mayor of Cedar Rapids and as president of the Chamber of Commerce, I can't tell you how many ribbon cuttings I've been to over the years. And they're great. I love these ribbon cuttings. But there are some ribbon cuttings where the smiles are a little bigger. And those are the ribbon cuttings where the owner of the business is passing on the business to the next generation. See, in the business community, that's called succession planning. This Natural Resource and Outdoor Protection Trust Fund that's dedicated to cleaning up our water and our environment is Iowa's version of succession planning for the next generation. You've been leading the way by supporting this back in 2010. It's time the leaders in Des Moines stop not going with the will of the people and start listening to the will of the people and make some efforts to clean up our water and protect our environment. So one, we have to grow our state. We need competitive tax rates and stable government budgeting. Two, we need to take care of our environment, specific to water quality and the health of our soil. Three, we need a stronger focus on K-12 education. Iowa used to be number one. We knew we were number one, and we were proud of it, and we bragged about it. We all know people that stayed here. Why? Because of a good education. We all know that people who moved here because of great education, and we all know people that moved back because of great education. We've slipped. We're no longer number one. We're down in the middle of the states. And that's saddening to me. And so I'm sounding a little bit of an alarm bell to wake people up so we don't have a continuous slide in education. Remember that old game, chutes and ladders? You roll the dice, you move your peg, and if you land on the ladder, you climb to the top. If you land on the slide, you slide to the bottom. And the object of the game is to win, to climb to the top and win, not slide to the bottom and lose. With changes in this year's legislative session, we have a chance to either climb to the top or slide to the bottom. You know, I played a lot of football. And over the years, the game of football has changed. But there's some things about football that haven't changed. Blocking and tackling. So the game changed, but you still have to focus on blocking and tackling. A lot of things in education need to change. We need to innovate more in our public school sector. But some things have never changed. Teachers and principals. Having the best teachers in the classroom and having the best leaders at principals, that's the fundamentals of having a solid education system. So we're proposing merit pay, performance-based pay for teachers. We've talked about it for a long, long, long time, and now we have the opportunity to do this. But we also have to support and equip our principles for the changing world that they live in. Now, I believe in school choice, and I think there's having homeschool, having private schools, having open enrollment, and we probably need maybe a few chartered schools, but a vast majority of our kids, our grandkids, go to the public schools. And we have to make sure that we're champions of public education, not undermining public education. The list core four, the first one, making our tax rates competitive, making sure that we have stable budgeting practices. Two, that we're taking care of our environment, specifically our water quality and the health of our soil. Three, being champions of public education, supporting the basics, teachers, and principals. And four, we have to show concern for citizens. You know, I have a new friend that asked me the other day. He says, if you get elected, are you going to have my back? You know, sometimes that's what people really care about. Do you care about them enough that you're going to show some concern that you have their back? And I'm going to tell you, Ron Corbett will have your back if I get elected governor of the state of Iowa. I've shown that as mayor. I had the back of the people that were affected by the flood. Now, showing concern for people doesn't mean creating government programs that take care of people. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about showing concern. Let me give you a couple examples. I didn't think it was unreasonable this last year that we look at raising the minimum wage by a dollar. You know, over the years, there's been a lot of inflation. There hasn't been a raise for the people that make minimum wage for 10 years. Now, I'm not in favor of some of those crazy policies to going $15 an hour. Those aren't reasonable and they're not sustainable. But I thought a buck an hour was reasonable. Hasn't been raised in 10 years. That's the type of showing concern for people and understanding their economic plight that they have. Another example of showing concern for people is in the area of healthcare. Now, I've really been saddened to see some of the inaction that has taken place in Washington, D.C., but it also has taken place in the state of Iowa. Do you know that we'll have 72,000 people that are going to be faced with no health insurance coming in January of this year? 72,000. These are self-employed people. These are small farmers. These are people that retired early. They're entrepreneurs. And they're faced with the prospect of not having any health insurance starting on January 1st. Now, I appreciate what the insurance commissioner is doing, throwing a Hail Mary pass here at the end of June, hoping that the president or Washington, D.C. is going to get a waiver and help us out here. We've been dealing with the federal government for 9 years, trying to get them to help us out with flood protection. We didn't wait. We decided to take matters into our own hands. And if you walk across the street, you can see we took matters into our own hands and we're building flood protection. But why are you waiting for 6 months before the end of the year to throw a Hail Mary pass and hope that you get some waiver? Tell me, there's 73,000 people. That's bigger than the city of Council Bluffs. Do you think people that are faced with losing their health insurance on January 1st are going to go out and buy new cars? Do you think they're going to add additions to their house? No, they're probably going to pull back. If there's going to be any special session this summer or fall, it should be to address this issue of the 72,000 people that are faced with the prospect of not having any health insurance. That's showing concern for people. And we have to do the same thing as relates to our mental health system. I understand the state cut their budget, reduced the beds, but all that did was push it on to the locals, either onto the hospitals or either into the jails or into the shelters. It didn't really solve the problem. It just pushed the problem around. There's a lot of uncertainty right now. That's showing concern for people. And on Medicaid, we had Medicaid 1.0. That was the government-run Medicaid. And we end up privatizing that. That's government 2.0 or Medicaid 2.0, but it's not working. There's too much insecurity out there now with people that are on Medicaid. This is for the very poor elderly that are in nursing homes. And I've been thinking about this. Why hasn't it worked? Why hasn't it worked? Because the mission statements are different. See, when you're in the public sector showing concern for people, you're working about taking care or helping people with disabilities, people that are in nursing homes, people that are most vulnerable. That's a different mission statement. When you mix that mission statement with for-profit companies, for-profit out-of-state companies, their mission statement is different. Now, I'm not against profit. I'm all in favor of the private sector. But that mission statement of maximizing shareholder value or bonusing executives on profit is in contrast with the public mission statement. And when the private sector mission statement of these managed care organizations take over, it squelches the public interest. And now we have a lose, lose, lose scenario. You know why what happens? Because people that are on Medicaid are being either denied services, delayed services. People that are providing the services, the hospitals, the healthcare agencies, are being reduced from their reimbursement, and the taxpayer, you and I, are being asked to pay more. Now, I'd be foolish to say that I don't like, I would introduce my own top-down decision on the people. That's the problem. It was a top-down decision that you didn't participate in. So I'm going to spend a lot of time over the next 6 to 9 months talking to people about their health care, not just the 72,000 people, but everyone that's on Medicaid. And we'll put together a bottom-up plan that's an Iowa-based plan. Now, I've got some ideas, and I'll share some of those ideas over the next 6 months, but I don't think the current system is working. It's not showing a concern for people. You see why it's important to have a new game plan for the state of Iowa? We've got some problems. We've got some challenges. And just like 8 years ago, when some people said, well, you're pointing out some of these negative things about what's going on in Cedar Rapids, I said, no, I'm pointing out problems and challenges so we can work to fix them. But they can only be fixed and worked on if you're participating. See, I want you to be part of the plan. If you and the people across Iowa are part of the plan, you will feel the same joy, the same sense of accomplishment, and the same pride that the people of Cedar Rapids have for everything we've done on the recovery and the rebuilding of our great city. So I invite you to be part of the plan, and when you do, you will feel that. And everyone in the state of Iowa can say what Linda Seeger said in her kitchen to me. I had a chance to make it better, and I did. Thank you very much.